From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, February 7th, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Maine Senators Republican Susan Collins and Independent Angus King were divided on Thursday in their confirmation votes for President Trump's new budget director. Kevin Miller has more.
Russell Vaught held the same position in the Office of Management and Budget during the first Trump administration. More recently, he's drawn attention as a key architect of Project 2025, the conservative plan to dramatically overhaul the federal government. Collins says she voted for Vaught because he is qualified and had already done the job, and she says presidents should have broad discretion when choosing their cabinet. But King says Vaught was the last person who should hold such a critical job. And he described Project 2025 as a, quote, blueprint for the shredding of the Constitution and the transition of our country to authoritarian rule.
Now, the nominee before us today is one of the ringleaders of this assault, one of the ringleaders of the assault on our Constitution. He believes in a presidency of virtually unlimited powers. He's written extensively about this and explicitly rejects, for example, the exclusive power of Congress to authorize and appropriate funds for the operation of the government.
Vaught's position on federal spending also puts him at odds with Collins, who leads one of the two congressional committees that decides how to divvy up the federal budget. Collins said this week that she hopes the courts will side with Congress when the issue of Trump's attempts to control spending is inevitably litigated. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
South Portland police say the suspect in Wednesday's shooting at the Maine Mall has surrendered. In a statement released Thursday evening, police say they learned that Ahmed Bashir Awad wanted to turn himself in so there could be a, quote, safe and peaceful resolution. They worked with a third party to accomplish this, and on Thursday afternoon, detectives say they met Awad outside the Cumberland County Jail and took him into custody without incident. He's charged with elevated aggravated assault, reckless conduct with a dangerous weapon, and a misdemeanor charge. State lawmakers are debating a measure intended to crack down on excessive dog barking. It would expand Maine's nuisance dog law to include dogs who disturb the peace with excessive barking, yelping, or howling. After an investigation by law enforcement, dog owners could be subject to a civil violation or fine. But Matt Fournier, president of the Maine Sporting Dog Association, says individual towns are best suited to address these problems, and he believes the measure could provoke unintended disputes between neighbors and kennel owners or hunters.
If I'm hunting with my dogs and somebody is camping and hears my dogs barking, would that then be considered a nuisance?
Many municipalities already have their own excessive barking ordinances, but bill sponsor Senator Rick Bennett says the measure is designed to give residents more tools for addressing unresolved problems and provide guidance for towns that may not have an ordinance. Bangor-based Penobscot Community Healthcare says as of this morning, federal funds are pending in their account and they no longer need to furlough staff. Earlier this week, the safety net provider that serves 60,000 patients in northern and mid-coast Maine had said that it was unable to access funds and would likely need to cut 25% of its payroll by the end of the week. In a statement, the group thanked members of Maine's congressional delegation for their attention to this issue. They say the situation illustrates the fragile position of community health centers. More people are calling the Maine Problem Gambling Hotline since the state legalized online sports betting over a year ago, and many of those seeking help are men between the ages of 18 and 30. Daniel Cassino, professor at Farley Dickinson University in New Jersey, says increased gambling addiction in young men is one consequence of the gaming industry.
How many young people are now problem gamblers are ruining their lives in order to get Maine or any other state a few million dollars in tax revenue?
Cassino says gambling advertisements often target young men in particular, making them more vulnerable to gambling addiction. Maine legalized online sports gambling in November of 2023 and took in $6 million in betting tax revenue last year, which it split with the Wabanaki Nations. AARP Maine, which advocates for older Mainers, says a survey found many older adults are struggling financially, State Director Noel Bonum says rising costs are making it harder for many to age at home.
The increase in utility rates, that's really, you know, causing high concern. It's a huge burden for older adults. If you're a renter, you're not able to afford the rent as prices are going up. If you're a homeowner, you're not able to afford the upkeep. You're not able to afford the taxes.
The survey of more than 700 Mainers 45 and older found 70% are either providing care to a loved one or have done so in the past. That, AARP says, costs the average caregiver over $7,000 a year. Bonum says AARP would like to see the legislature relaunch a pilot program that provided $2,000 grants to people caring for loved ones with some form of dementia. A judge has ruled today that Maine's first in-person sports betting parlor will be allowed to take bets for the Super Bowl. Caitlin Badayon has more.
Since opening in Portland in September, Oddfellas Sportsbook and Bar has operated under a temporary sports wagering facility license. But earlier this month, the director of the Maine Gambling Control Unit denied the application for a permanent license on grounds that it didn't qualify. First Tracks Investments, which owns the bar, appealed the denial and asked the court for a temporary order to allow them to continue taking bets. Cumberland County Superior Court Justice John O'Neill ruled in favor of the bar, finding that it would be harmed by the lost revenue and that the owner would likely succeed in its appeal for a permanent license. The Department of Public Safety has scheduled a hearing for Thursday, March 6th for the appeal on the permanent license. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Badayan.
The risk status of avian flu in Maine has been elevated from moderate to high.
The reason is migration.
Jim Britt is a spokesperson for the State Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. He says migratory birds are on the move, and it's their interaction with commercial and backyard flocks that spreads avian flu.
It really is the time of year for everyone who is a bird keeper, a commercial bird operator, to be increasing biosecurity and doing everything possible and everything right to protect these birds.
Three wild birds in York County recently tested positive for avian flu, two Canadian geese, and one great horned owl. And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our regular look at government and politics. I'm joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller. This week, a Senate committee advanced one of President Trump's most controversial cabinet picks, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., to the Department of Health and Human Services. Steve, that sets up a potential confirmation vote by the full U.S. Senate next week. Kennedy has pushed vaccine misinformation for years. What does this mean for the future of public health?
Well, that's an important question, Ari, and I'm not sure what to expect if Kennedy gets the final nod from the Senate as soon as potentially next week. I mean, he has scant medical or public health credentials, and as you noted, he's been peddling anti-vaccine rhetoric for years. During COVID, his nonprofit, Children's Health Defense, pushed a lot of misinformation about the COVID vaccine. Now, Kennedy has described it as this plot by elites to prolong the pandemic. Have a listen to this clip from a podcast he hosted alongside an internist in Ellsworth, Merrill Nass.
The plan of Fauci, of Gates, of Farrar is to lengthen this pandemic, to intensify it, to make it lethal, so that people are terrified and they will take those vaccines.
What's interesting is how that kind of rhetoric has been seeded in Maine. I mentioned that he was talking to an internist in Ellsworth in that clip, and that same doctor is affiliated with Children's Health Defense. She's testified in public hearings on vaccine bills in the legislature, and she even briefed state lawmakers on vaccines in 2021 and admitted that she lied to a pharmacist to obtain hydroxychloroquine to treat a COVID patient. That's not an approved treatment, and its efficacy has been largely disproven, and the study touting its purported benefits was retracted late last year. That same doctor recently co-signed a letter backing Kennedy's confirmation, and the Associated Press found that many of the doctor signatories on that letter had their licenses suspended, revoked, or they were sanctioned in some other way. That letter was designed to counter what is essentially a plea from doctors, public health officials across the country, not to confirm him. And after all, HHS oversees vaccine research, development, and approval, And the fear is that work will either come to an end or will be thwarted in some way.
And Steve, do we know how Republican Senator Susan Collins is going to vote on Kennedy's nomination?
No, not yet. She had a chance to question Kennedy during a separate confirmation hearing, and I think a lot of people were looking there to see, you know, if there were any clues to how she would land on Kennedy. You know, she asked him about vaccines and declining confidence in them among the American public, but she didn't really press him when he told her that a lack of confidence in vaccines stems from a lack of confidence in government. He didn't take any responsibility for his own role in that declining confidence.
In another high-profile nomination fight, Maine Senator Susan Collins supported Trump's nominee to head the Office of Management and Budget, Russell Vought. That's despite Vought's clearly stated opposition to Congress controlling federal spending. So, Kevin, why would Collins, as head of the Senate Appropriations Committee, support this view?
Well, Collins is making clear that she doesn't support Russell Vought and Trump's view that the president and not Congress should have more control over the purse strings. That power rests entirely with Congress right now, and specifically with the House and the Senate Appropriations Committees, and Senator Collins is the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. So she's making clear she still thinks Congress should control the power of the purse, as they say. But she says that she voted for Vought because he was qualified, and that is her biggest determination when she's looking at any president's nominees for a cabinet position, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. And, you know, basically when she's looking at these cabinet nominees, that those qualifications are the big things that she looks at. What's interesting is kind of what happens now. Mr. Vought has made clear that both he and President Trump, you know, think the president should have more power over spending. It seems like they're likely to challenge it. And what Senator Collins has said is if that happens, she thinks it will end up in the courts, and she hopes that the courts side with Congress on this fight.
Meanwhile, Democrats are honing their attacks on Elon Musk. Jared Golden jumped into the fray this week, even though he has typically refrained from strong criticisms of the Trump administration. Steve, what is he saying?
Yeah, Golden took a different tack from other Democrats in criticizing Musk. The Second District Congressman was basically trying to prod Trump's ego by suggesting that Musk was stepping on his toes and pursuing his own agenda. He called Musk an unelected weirdo billionaire, which generated a lot of attention, of course. But it's interesting, Ari, because as you mentioned, Golden has generally steered clear of criticizing Trump. You know, he declined to comment on his pardoning of the January 6th rioters and even chided reporters for asking about it. And he made a big show of supporting the president's now suspended tariff gambit with Canada and Mexico. So another way to read this is that Musk is just becoming deeply unpopular, more so than Trump. So if you're a Democrat under pressure to speak out against some of these actions, but really don't want to upset your second district constituents, Musk is an easier target than the president.
And at the state level, an anti-Trump protest in Augusta highlighted some internal division on the left over how best to push back on this deluge of executive actions we've seen coming from the White House. Kevin, what happened and what does it tell us about the state of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, so Democrats are still very much trying to figure out the best way to respond to everything that's coming from the Trump administration, really at breakneck speed. Wednesday's protests, I'd say, showed how much that internal struggle is very much happening here in Maine. This wasn't the largest protest we've seen in Maine during the Trump era, but a few hundred people turned out and they were pretty energized. What made the turnout even more noteworthy, I'd say, is the lack of any official involvement by the Democratic Party or Democratic leaders in the state. So this was really kind of a grassroots protest. But that's not how it started. So the Kennebec County Democratic Committee had obtained a permit to hold the event, but then the committee abruptly canceled it because they said that, quote, bad actors had infiltrated it and were planning to spread hate and cause all kinds of turmoil. So other activists stepped in, got a permit, and pushed ahead, and there were no major issues. During the protest, we talked to the organizer, Nicholas Jackson, and here's a little bit of what he had to say when we asked about everything that happened with the local party.
When the Democrats pulled out, it said two things. One is that they are currently too afraid to actually stand up for this. And two is that they don't even know what's really going on around them.
Like I said, this debate is happening on the national level. There are more protests that are being talked about and planned here in Maine. So I guess that'll be another interesting thing to see how many people show up for them and whether that momentum is continued in some way.
That was Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. You can read and subscribe to The Pulse on our website, mainepublic.org/pulse. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.